The views expressed by the host or hosts in this show do not necessarily represent those of our clients, sponsors, partners, or guests, and should not be considered investment advice in any way. Similarly, the views and opinions of our guests and clients do not necessarily reflect those of our hosts or our platform. Nothing shared on this platform or any other platform affiliated with us should be read and construed as constituting investment advice of any kind on the part of Insider Exchange, any of its hosts, guests, partners, or sponsors. Trading and investing carry varying levels of risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Please ensure that you fully understand the risks and take appropriate care to manage your risk. We strongly advise that you obtain independent financial, legal, and tax advice from regulated professionals and institutions before proceeding with investment decisions.
Yes, folks, we caved. We gave in. There was outrage from the community. Everybody told us we have to go back to Starbucks. And there was a crazy suggestion by James of our community that we try some experimental coffee and brew it ourselves. James, we don't know why you'd suggest such things.
And I brew coffee. I got a machine. I make as good a coffee as you're going to find anywhere in Germany.
Oh, no.
But then I got to get it from there to here. So we'd have to all go there.
Okay, so we might do that. We might have an episode from a random location, undisclosed, of course, for size
my
protection. Okay, he's told you. It's his kitchen. There we go. Secrets out. But yes, we've got coffee from Starbucks this week because there was outrage and we don't like outrage. We like listening to our community. You guys said we have to bring back Starbucks. Sai, interestingly enough, apart from the fact that I'm Jimmy with one M this week, you'd be happy to know that we are officially in the festive period because we have done away with pumpkin spice. We're now on gingerbread flavored coffees. So yes, Starbucks and being on theme with the holidays.
And my birthday's passed. That's all that matters.
That's all that matters. See, so after the regulations have been put in place. Yes,
let's kick things off. Let's get the show on the road.
Unfiltered. 98 are currently collapsing.
Privilege of welcoming one of our good friends into studio.
So not even Buffett listens to Buffett.
Sue me, China, if you must.
1 or 22 on AC, but you're not getting that at home.
Ken, there's quite a bit to discuss.
The stock is cheap.
The last podcast I did.
Whoa, introduce me.
I'm Jimmy Moya.
And I'm Simon Brown.
Welcome to Insider Exchange.
Hello and welcome to Insider Exchange. We trust you have had a good start to, I suppose, what would be considered the festive period. Going to dive straight into our useful updates and see if we can get through all of them. As usual, we definitely do not have enough time for the updates themselves, but we're going to try nonetheless. So, we're going to get going in 3, 2, 1. Oh, I like that. First upgrade, the midterm budget policy statement that took place last week, we built up to it. The one thing I did not have on my bingo card for this year was National Treasury coming in and saying, yes, 3% inflation.
Yeah, I did. But with the caveat, 1% band either red, so effectively 2 to 4%. No, why wait? Why have this friction between our Reserve Bank and our Treasury when it's going to happen sooner or later? What's so special about February? Okay, lots of special about February. but no. Good man.
Yeah, look, I didn't anticipate it would happen because typically you see the government wanting to make this announcement themselves and the fact that the Saab got ahead of them, might not have sat too well with them. But I suppose they dealt with it. We're happy they dealt with it. We're going to look at the inflation targeting at another time because, you know, we don't have time for that. rates decision, that's coming out this week. MPC is meeting. Off the back of exactly the midterm budget policy statement, do we expect a rate cut?
Yes.
25 basis points, 50 basis points, 75 basis points?
Don't. My yes is as optimistic as I can get. 25. Here's what. Inflation is 3.4. We've got a band now of 2 to 4, so we're comfortably within that band. I know we're edging higher, but no one expects it to pop out the top of the band next year. Mm-hmm. So we're in the band. All is good. Look at oil there. I saw a thing from 91 with Rand at 70 and oil in the low 60s. Our inflation's about 2.9. So yeah, 25 points.
Okay, so we are expecting a rate cut.
Notwithstanding, they're all Grinches, but hey, we live in hope.
Well, we live in hope, right? I think that's the one thing. I think while we're looking at this, let's wrap things up. 3 for 3, South Africa, been on a roll. Ratings upgrade from Standard & Poor's.
Job.
Oh, it's so good.
I mean, ahead of Wednesday, I wasn't sure. Then Wednesday was a good MTBPS, and I thought, this is quite doable. But we've also got a positive outlook, which means that at their next one, they could do us again. And then the next one, we could be non-junk by, it's not be silly.
No, no, no.
Because we are still
back to reality.
Two notches in junk, to be clear. But no, I mean, really, really good news. I mean, it is such baby steps. I mean, turning around a broken economy is a baby thing. The minister in his MTPP said 1.8% GDP, which is lovely. It's 2x what we've been doing. It's half x what we should be doing. We'll take it.
We'll definitely take it. I think as well, if we look at the ratings reviews, we know that the likes of Moody's will move first, Standard & Poor's, and then Fitch will be the lagger.
Fitch is always late.
Yeah, Fitch is always last to the party. But I think from an overall perspective, this is something that screams a positive outlook and a positive sentiment for the South African story. We do, as you rightly mentioned, Si, have a lot to get through before we can get to a point where we're saying, excuse me, the country's back on track and we have all of the things under control. But I think we're on the right path.
Yes, and we haven't felt that for a long time. And just quickly, so Moody's does a review, I think, in December. They did put out a thing yesterday. South Africa's debt path still fragile. I mean, that is frankly just stupid. Moody's, get your act together. we are our debt is not great, but it's going in the right direction. We've got a budget surplus, primary budget surplus.
The words budget and surplus have never been said in Treasury for
like
the longest
time. Half, according to more controls from 91, there are only about a half dozen countries in the world with such.
Okay.
And none of them are G7.
Well, we might not even be G20 because according to Trump, we don't need to be part of the G's. But before we take our halftime break, Walmart, they are coming to South Africa. We know this. We've discussed this. The official date has been announced, the 22nd of November. This week, end of this week, opening at Clearwater Mall. There was something about them looking to tease some influencers and some involvement. Apparently, we're not important enough to be considered as influencers in that
respect.
Do
you know how far Clearwater Mall is?
You wouldn't travel that way. It's closer to me, I suppose. I'm not too far from it. But yeah, Walmart, 22nd November. On that note, halftime break.
Halftime break.
Snack break.
Snack break.
Yes. Yeah. Well, what's left of the snacks? Because apparently, we got accused of being those children that eat our lunch before the lunch break. We're sorry. But the snacks are decent. What are we supposed to do? Questions about the gingerbread latte. That is, it's kind of Christmassy.
Oh, you got the gingerbread latte.
Yeah, it's kind of Christmassy. If I were to have Christmas in the Northern Hemisphere at this point, which I have yet to do in my life. And we are back. Back from our halftime snack break. Still unsponsored, but I suppose that might change one day. Let's get straight back into it. Si, we buy cars. The results came out yesterday. I caught up with the CEO. They flagged something in the SENS announcement that the CEO then went and re-emphasized the fact that the Chinese markets or the introduction of Chinese players in the market has done something to upset sort of the natural balance of things and they've had to make some adjustments. Very weird that you would openly come out and say, look, Chinese brands coming in are a real threat.
Remember the rumor a while ago that they might start selling new Chinese cars at their Dubai cars. I hear your point. Although, I mean, patently, I mean, I actually wrote about this for Financial Mail when the trading update came. I'm like, their average car price is 150, but most of their cars are north of that. And at a Chinese car at 350, like, you've got real competition coming through. Because the fun fact with WeBuy Cars is just go to WeBuy Cars, we sell cars, and you can query their database and get all sorts of fun information. Key point, I think they sold 16,000 units. The stock's not cheap at current points. It was, you know, in the PE, the HEPS of 15% was a little light, but I still like it. And they're getting that market share. And to his point, he also said, is that, you know, in 2-3 years, those Chinese cars start appearing on their showroom floors.
And they appear with some value being retained, which I had the question of saying, where does that put us from a value perspective? Are we now seeing cheaper vehicles entering the market? It's like, no, they actually retain some of their value. But that's all we have time for on that. Revolut and their banking license. Interesting for a player in this space, mostly a digital bank kind of environment, big in Europe at the moment. They've got their licensing there. Pursuing a South African banking license in and of itself is a mission, much less when you're a business that is not South African.
Yeah. I mean, why don't we have a banking license? Because everyone else does. I mean, I hear them. Guys, I mean, look what it costs Discovery, Old Mutual. You need big pockets.
Yes, or just for a better exchange rate than the Rand, I suppose. If you're doing it in euros, it's cheaper. It doesn't feel as bad.
You mean we should open a bank in Zimbabwe?
Yes, we'll be very rich there.
Well, okay. I don't know. This is a crowded market. Best of luck,
right? I suppose that's all we can really say to them. I have saved this update. It's partly a make it make sense, but more of a useful update. We have, over the last couple of weeks, achieved almost the Mount Rushmore of resignations.
Mm.
Warren Buffett stepping down from Berkshire Hathaway.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Burry closing up shop.
Mm.
Asset manager who called the 2008 financial crisis. Side note on that, I'm so sad our community did not correct me. It was not Margin Call. The movie was The Big Short. We got our wires crossed there. Nevertheless, Michael Burry closing up shop, saying that the markets don't make sense. The third one, possibly the greatest fundamental trader of our generation and many other generations, Nancy Pelosi leaving leaving office after 37 years in office.
Only 37.
And almost 18,000% in returns.
I thought it was 73 years.
Now, I said this was...
And throw Tim Cook into it. Rumors he's going.
Oh, well, okay, so that might complete the fourth. Mm. Mount Rushmore is four presidents. It might complete the fourth one. But I happen to wonder whether or not the individual that currently sits and occupies the Oval Office would want to be placed on that Mount Rushmore because he just likes to be placed in front of things. We're out of time, Si. We're out of time. What do we do?
He would.
He would. Okay, there we go. We did it. We made it. That's useful updates, folks. We're going to get into our deep dive. We're going to be diving into the business of sponsorships and taking a look at whether or not that offers value in today's day and age and how to navigate that. And then, of course, we do have our Make It Make Sense, where we try and make sense of numbers or things that simply do not make sense. And, of course, there's an unfiltered opinion. So stick around. The show goes on. In our deep dive this week, we are diving into the business of sponsorships, whatever you want to call it, actually. Sponsorships, partnerships, collaborations, comes in many shapes, forms, names, but all importantly is how to go about doing it right and what value that could add. Folks, please remember all of our conversations on our show, the entirety of the show, not any specific segment, but the whole show is not financial advice. Don't take it as financial advice. That would really upset us, although we wouldn't be bothered too much. Just don't come back to us and say that we gave you financial advice, because we don't.
We don't.
It's not what we do. We're not those people. Yes, the business of sponsorships.
Yeah.
It's interesting. It's an interesting world because I say this because I've just come off of an event this past weekend that reminded me both of the power of sponsorships and the fact that I'm in the wrong tax bracket. Equally, at the same time, I happened to be at the Evolda V Polo test match. The first time we've held a test match for polo in South Africa in more than 15 years.
Wow.
South Africa versus England. Long story short, South Africa. Yeah. We're dominating. If it's a sport, we're winning it. That's our 2025, guys. If it's a sport, South Africa's winning it. If we end up winning the World Cup, I wouldn't even be surprised. The FIFA World Cup. You know, I mean, Bafana. We've got faith in Hugo Bruce and the boys. Not the topic of conversation, but perhaps tied into that as well is sponsorships. A lot of sport, a lot of conversations like these require a level of sponsorship to keep going. In order for certain things to happen, there is a monetary cost to building anything. There's a monetary cost to running a sports team. There's a monetary cost to running a podcast. There's a monetary cost to running a taxi business. There's a monetary cost to almost everything. And in that is where the conversation of sponsorships, partnerships, and collaborations kind of fits in. Because if you have those, it makes it easier to do certain things. But it also means then that you're able to amplify your conversations and the voices within those conversations.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, it is a weird thing because, of course, if you're a high profile sport, if you're rugby, and there's we're beating whoever we beat this weekend, Italy and Ireland next and France before, you know.
Whoever's next on the list.
Whoever's next, we're going to beat them. If we're doing that, there's your sport, your broadcasters pay a large amount of money for it. So you get the broadcasters coming in and they write big checks. Absolutely, they write big checks. But apparently those big checks aren't big enough, to your point, because then they come and they get Pick and Pay on the back of their jersey, and they've had MTN and others at various points. I've always just wondered, although there was a team that was, watching the Italy game on Saturday, there was like, who's that sponsoring Italy? So we go and Google it, and it's some German company no one's ever heard of before.
But you did the thing, right? The point of the sponsorship is to spotlight that business. You went and did the thing to out more about the business.
They got a hit to their website that they wouldn't otherwise have got. I suppose, I can't remember who they were, but that's another story for another day. So I suppose, because I'm thinking to myself, like, why is Pick and Pay there? I know about Pick and Pay. I know. So sometimes I think it's weird because, okay, Pick and Pay is trying to raise their image in the eye of the public. Okay, why don't they just make better stores and cheaper prices, like the old-fashioned Raymond Ackerman way of doing it?
Yeah.
Or you know, maybe once they've got sort of their mojo back, then kind of go out and say, you know, mojo Pick and Pay or whatever the case may be. Mm. So sometimes I wonder about it. You know, when MTN's there, I mean, I'm on a telco. I think I'm MTN. Yeah, I'm MTN. I'm on a telco, so what? You know, like they work. Like, do I like their products and stuff? No, but they give me data. They give me far too much voice. They insist I take SMSs. And, you know, but it's like I'm there. And I did switch once, and weirdly, when I left Vodacom, because I got my phone in 94. And when I left Vodacom in 2010, like they didn't even, like, say we miss you.
Mm, they didn't even try and keep you.
Nah.
But this is the thing, Si. This is why the conversation around the business of sponsorships is being had. Is that how then do you have the sponsorship conversations? What does brand alignment look like? What does a cohesive...
It's that,
I mean, to your point around Pick and Pays and MTNs, and are you jumping on the Springboks for the sake of jumping on the Springboks? Or do you believe in what the team stands for, how the team conducts themselves, how the team plays? To that point, there have been brand deals and brand partnerships and relationships that haven't necessarily worked out in the past. There's some that are still ongoing now that you, I know, would not agree with. If you fly into King Shark International and you see Hollywood Bets everywhere, you are not going to be happy with that. You know, so how do you then see whether or not this lines up with your brand and your image and what it is you're looking to do? And more importantly, I think in the day and age we live in, it goes beyond just monetization. It goes to things like value add.
And I think that's a great point. To then I raise two questions. One is, what happens if the Springboks get knocked out in the group stages?
That's it. Do you just give up on them?
I mean, now I think there's allying yourself with winners, right?
And
that's
and trend hopping and jumping on something because it's trendy.
And you want to be with the Springboks, not just because they're winners. So therefore, the assumption is that you're winners, and that's a psychological trick, and it's happening in your subconscious. It's not a conscious thing. But here's a question: Protea's test team, who sponsors that?
The Protea's test team.
Now, I just watched 3 days of cricket, and I can't tell you.
Really?
Yeah.
Is it not Castle Lager?
Not in 100 days.
Hmm. Okay. While you look for that, I want to get into the value of proper alignment.
Crunchyroll.
Crunchyroll. Is that some new form of sushi crunch roll?
No, I must be clear. I don't watch the T20s and ODIs, so I don't know who that is.
Mm-hmm.
But they just signed a deal with Crunchyroll. Okay.
Okay.
I'm trying to find out. So team partners, Suzuki, team partners, event. Okay, Castle's still there.
Mm-hmm.
Springbok, Atlas, Protea, Virgin, KFC, Flight Safari. Okay. I mean, 3 days of watching them whip the Indians and I didn't know
You didn't figure out who they were playing with. Yeah. So this is the thing. How do you, from a partnership and a collaboration point of view, ensure alignment, right? So think back to Bafana Bafana and Banxo that then subsequently had their license suspended. Or think back to Rick Ross doing the Pick and Pay advert when he was in South Africa. Yes, he did a whole ad for Pick and Pay when he was in South Africa. Another example, most recent one from the Polo this weekend, Volvo was the lead sponsor there alongside Standard Bank being headline sponsor. So you're now not only making decisions on the event or the purpose or this particular collaboration, but what other collaborating partners are coming in, and are we okay with those collaborating partners?
And maybe that's part of it, right? Because you get to the Polo from Standard Bank or Volvo or whoever, and it becomes a sort of marketing, but beyond marketing, it now becomes events.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when I was at Standard Bank and they had boxes at the cricket, and well, they still probably do. In fact, they do have at the rugby as well. And it's more than just that. Now, in the case of the boxes, anyone can buy a box, but way back in the day, we were, Standard Bank was sponsoring, I think the ODI team, and so, you know, we could have clients, and there was meet and greets that were happening and that sort of thing.
Mm.
So I suppose now you're using it to butter. So it's marketing / PR on steroids in a sense.
But this is also where alignment becomes important, right? So for example, let's take the Rick Ross example. Rick Ross builds typically.
Okay, can
anywhere.
I ask who Rick Ross is first?
Go for it.
Who's Rick Ross? Rick Ross is William Leonard Roberts II, an American rapper, for his booming vocal performance, Larger Than Life. Okay. Rose to fame in 2006.
Clearly not famous enough.
He's almost 50. Okay, carry on. Ignore me.
He charges anywhere between $100,000 to $200,000 for corporate ads and appearances. Right. For context, that's anywhere between 2 million and almost 4 million rand.
Which is like...
And this is where the conversation around alignment comes in, right? Is... Would you pay that kind of money? Does it make sense? And how do you start to measure it? Because a lot of companies now are measuring ROIs and PR companies are measuring a return on investment in terms of number of views, number of clicks, and all those sorts of things. But is that genuine engagement? Is that value add to your product? Take, for example, our show. Our community engages with us because of the quality of what we put out there, not because our videos can achieve 15,000 likes per video, yeah. Which, to be clear, we can achieve.
But and I think then that's a...
It's the alignment.
It's a really great thing. And Checkers is currently doing it with that English chef man.
Jamie Oliver.
Yeah, we...
Yes.
Jamie Oliver. Which unfortunately...
The one that's not Gordon Ramsay.
Yeah, my wife hates them both. So I've got to steer her away from the Jamie Oliver ad because, we can't afford to shop at Woolies. So we've got to keep the shopping. And then Woolies did it with that one chap and they did a whole clothing line and stuff and Will Ferrell.
Oh, yes.
A decade or so ago. That absolutely didn't work. So there is hit and miss. But I do see what Checkers is doing, for example. They're getting a well-known celebrity chef in. They're upgrading, again, that alignment. Jamie Oliver shops at Checkers.
He buys his ingredients from Checkers.
He couldn't even find Africa on a map, never mind a Checkers. But you know what? The point is it's that sort of proximity to fame.
Mm.
I think sometimes it's weird. Sometimes it goes wrong. Tiger Woods, when he... turned out he was, yeah.
But Tiger Woods, see, again, with Tiger Woods and Johnny Depp and all of that, look at what Tiger then went and did with Nike after all the scandals cleared up. Look at what Johnny Depp went and did with Dior after every other brand abandoned him. So
there's a moment of pain and then it's like all is forgiven.
And
which
then,
again, with respect, kind of like offends me because it means that... Well, okay, I was going to say you've got no morals, you're just doing it for the marketing, but that is what's happening.
But again, in the situation of, say, for example, Johnny Depp, who was then proven innocent and not guilty of the things that he was being accused of, for you to then abandon someone in that scenario and then they come out the other side innocent and you want to come back and say, hey, your brand was a great brand. We just didn't have faith that you were going to clear your name, but now we want to do business with you again. You can see why from the other side of the coin, it leaves a bitter taste in the mouth to say, but you didn't stick by me when... I needed the
no, but hell yeah, hell
by.
Yeah, no.
See, so it's pretty much a two-way street, right?
Yeah, he was accused of spousal abuse.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Accused of something very serious.
And I thought he lost in the British courts and then sued for defamation and won in the US court. Whatever the case is, with respect, and I know there's people who disagree, man, someone's accused of spousal abuse, you step aside for a minute. It's like, you go sort your stuff out, then maybe phone me later. You know what? I might still be busy.
Fair. But brands like Dior still stuck around and said, look, regardless of what it is, we're standing by you. But this is the thing. This is why we wanted to have this conversation around how you then build for sponsorships and how you then build for partnerships and collaborations. Because the one thing you don't want to do is have a serious misalignment that just makes no sense. Imagine if, for example, we had to have, I don't know, I'm trying to think of what wouldn't make sense to align with us. Imagine if we had to have mascara. We had to invite the team from Rimmel to come and advertise some mascara. You and I have no use for this. Some members in our community might, but the brand alignment for us to then go in and say, hey guys, these are the, we're happy to be, that's where you start to see the difference between authentic collaboration, at least how I see it, and just collaborating for the sake of collaborating.
And we do, those influencers who sent a young woman to Russia to become...
Oh, we completely forgot about that, that entire scandal.
Yeah, yeah, which is very much a case of, we just want the money, we don't care who you are, just send the money. I assume they didn't get paid in rubles.
Well, even if they did, I don't know if they'd know how to clear the rubles in South African rands.
Well, because you can't get them cleared. Yes, yes.
So this is to your point, Si, exactly to your point, is then how then do you approach the conversations around alignment and collaboration when everybody wants value? Very few people are adding value in this day and age. And when you are adding value, sometimes people are looking at the wrong metrics. Sometimes people are like, oh, but you're adding value, but you're not as populist as that particular individual.
Because views and clicks and everything else is nice, but at the end of the day, you want people in your shop or whatever buying your brand or that's
a natural alignment.
And that's what you need.
Yes.
You need to get, I mean, companies spend globally, I don't know, billions, trillions on it, and they need to see that they're actually getting a bang for the buck. If you're spending, a billion rand sponsoring someone and you only get a million in, like the numbers don't add up, you stop that sponsorship. It is, of course, impossible to really measure, which is why they love online, because clicks, but clicks aren't money.
And this is the other thing, is how do you then measure it sustainably? Because like you said, one, clicks aren't money. Two, just because somebody sees something doesn't necessarily mean they will walk in and purchase that, right? I think if I think about something like a Specsavers, random example, if they came on and said, here's a brand alignment, we would love to fit out the spectacles for the show. There's an alignment. There are spectacles on the show. That would make sense, right? At the same time, if you have conversations around, hey, Simon and Jimmy are going to be doing a road show and a vehicle partner comes on board. I've worked with Volvo in the past. A Volvo comes on board and says, hey guys, we'd love to be your vehicle partner for this adventure. Off you go. Brand alignment. Make sense, right? But if you then come in and say, Jimmy and Simon intend to do a half marathon, and suddenly
young man, I am busy that day.
I would not sign you up for that. I wouldn't dare dream of doing
that.
But yes, if we do that, and then suddenly, for example, a Pep Home comes on board and says, hey, do you want some pillows for your marathon? Absolutely not.
I hear you.
Nothing against Pep Home and their pillows. I'm sure they make lovely pillows. But again, this is the collaboration and the partnerships and the sponsorships.
And that's where it's shifted, right? Because we might have a news broadcast or, I mean, for example, let's stay with your pillows. So there's a Springbok rugby game and there's an advert for pillows. And we're all just like, we don't think that's weird. But we do think it's weird if we partner. So it is sort of, I suppose, and it goes back to it, sponsorship is advertising, but is fundamentally different from it at the same time.
And this is where I think, from a business of partnerships and a business of sponsorships perspective, you're going to start to see a divergence. Any brands that are able to properly find alignment in storytelling have a huge chance at success, because you're hitting your audience at something they can relate to and in a medium that they are already comfortable in. But to achieve that means you need to align yourself, whether you're the brand or whether you're the other collaborating partner. You need to align yourself very carefully to ensure that you get that across naturally and smoothly. The last thing you want is to have a bit of a broken feel to, hey guys, we're promoting this kind of thing, because I feel like, to a certain extent, that can be disingenuous if it's done incorrectly. But at the same time, I also just come from a time where you add value to the things that you're a part of, man.
Yeah.
Surely.
Yeah. I agree with you. I think a lot don't. I mean, there's the grifters, podcast grifters in America will do anything. We spoke about the Russian scandal a little while ago. I think a lot of it is you know, and again, if we go back 20 years ago, which is a long time, I appreciate, but it was fundamentally done differently. It really, you had to be someone of, you know, now anyone can get a brand deal. Mm. And sometimes the brand deals are like, they're just going to give you a pillow. They're not going to pay you. It's just like, yeah, Jimmy, have a pillow.
Here's the pillow, yeah.
And that's
yeah.
your payment. And they're like, hmm.
It speaks to credibility, right? It speaks yeah. to yeah. whether or not you are a voice that can be trusted, relied upon, relatable mm-hmm. in the area that you are speaking on. I mean, imagine if you and I had to come out and comment on things that relate to, I don't know, biology and sciences. That's not our forte. That's not what we do, you know? So for us to yeah, come out and yeah. say, this molecular study that took place by, or that was conducted by this university is outrageous, we would be out of place, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's where credibility comes in, right? If you are an authoritative voice on a particular topic or in a particular field, then that lends itself to some privileges and some benefits. But at the same time, I think now this conversation becomes even more important because we now need to look at it from a SARS perspective.
Well,
taxes now, SARS has come out very clearly to say, hey, content yeah. creators, influencers, all of them.
I was surprised when SARS issued that because I don't understand how people thought they were getting revenue, but they didn't have to pay tax because it was on TikTok. No, come on, people. No. What I do want to know is, how do you pay tax on a pillow? Can I slice like,
see, but
or
now,
do we share it? I get it 5 days, they get it two.
Right? I mean, this is where we're getting into a very gray area.
Yeah.
If I declare the pillow, and there's a monetary value associated with the pillow of 10 rand.
Yeah.
Is SARS going to demand 5%, 15%, 25% of that 10 rand? How does that work?
Mm-hmm.
That's something that everybody has to take into account and considerations around how to navigate that from a partnership and a deal perspective.
Yeah, yeah.
And I suppose that's what factors into some of the decision-making processes that happen. But I think the main thing, as we wrap up the conversation, is more around when looking at these partnerships and looking at these relationships, surely there must be alignment, number one. Number two, there must be some form of credibility in what it is you're aligning yourself to. I mean, the last thing you want to do is to put money behind something that doesn't have credibility.
Because there's that too, because there's also your reputation.
I mean, yes.
If you're
you're a big brand, if you're a small brand, it doesn't matter.
You're Bufano and you had Banksia on your shirt. Orcs.
To be, and I suppose from a credibility perspective, this is where due diligence comes in, right? Is, did you do your research beforehand?
Yeah, okay, I thought you were going to say, did the check clear or not?
For some people, that is due diligence. Did the check clear? But yeah, I guess we're not going to get to the bottom of the business of partnerships and collaborations and sponsorships in one conversation, but we have a better idea now of how to make it work and how yeah. it should work.
Yeah, yeah.
Folks out there, we'd love to get your thoughts and your opinions on this. Do you believe that companies and brands should just be aligning themselves with the most populist person? Do you believe that, or do you share our views that there needs to be some form of sense and logic that goes hand in hand with these sorts of alignments? And if you have tips on how to get alignments, perhaps they can help out some people, perhaps they can help out other members of the communities. We have conversations, we've had aligned partners on our show before, and we make that very clear to you, our community, when we have that. But we'd love to get your thoughts on that. We'd love to get your opinions around how you think the business of partnerships and sponsorships should be handled. For now, we're going to leave the conversation there. That's all we have time for in this deep dive. We're going to get into our Make It Make Sense. And we're wrapping things up with our Make It Make Sense. We try and make sense of things that are happening out there. Some of them numbers related, some of them just purely unbelievable. And we try and make sense of them and see if you can help us make sense of them. This week, we are taking a look at three things again. I suppose let's start with the most irrelevant one, I guess. The government of South Africa wants to have their own MVNO. For those that don't know what an MVNO is, it's a mobile virtual network operator. They want their own network, basically. We've got Cell C, we've got Telkom, we've got the big telcos, Vodacom, MTN,
and I want to
etc.
Clifton. I can't have that either.
Maybe
our
you
government
can.
Wants an
Maybe if we get the bank, you can get the penthouse in Clifton.
Yeah.
So our government wants their own MVNO. At a time where the telco market is saturated, at a time where FNB has their own MVNO, Standard Bank, Capitec. APSA, Capitec, the banks have their own MVNOs. The government of South Africa seems to think they can pull this off.
To what purpose?
Hence, make it make sense.
Well, because who was it? So we've got that the procurement database, which you can now search. And Tim Cohen did some digging. And the government is spending, I think, about 400 rand a month on mobile bills for every government employee in the country.
So. Oh, well, that would make sense then. So we can just have you on our network and recoup some of that money when you make the calls and you buy the airtime from us.
Yeah.
I can't.
I
it makes the segment for that very reason. I mean, if you think about it, and you think about what Vodacom, we spoke about this a couple of weeks ago, Vodacom and asset management and leveraging their 200 plus million customers. The government has 60 plus million customers they can leverage as well, right? So there is merit from a volume perspective.
That's their thinking.
What are you going to offer as a service?
I am not switching.
What are you going to offer as a service?
Yeah. We are the government. Please love us. No.
Buy your airtime and then what? Do we load shed the network if something goes wrong? How does this all work? Yeah, we've got nothing. That's all. We've got nothing. We've got absolutely nothing. If you can make sense of it, folks, please tell us. Please enlighten us. We've got nothing. We're going to move on. We're going to move on to Samsung. They announced that over the next 5 years, they intend to spend 310 odd billion US dollars on artificial intelligence. Now, two things on that one. First of all, it's about time. Secondly, that equates to several trillions of rands, which ties into our third make it make sense.
But I can see why some, so it's 50 billion a year, 60 billion a year, 62. That's
it's about 5.8 odd trillion rand at current rand terms over 5 years.
Yeah. But I mean, and they've got fridges and TVs and although please
don't. Samsung's made everything.
I mean, phones, like they've got
everything.
They've got absolutely everything. Please, dear goodness, do not put anything smart in my fridge. I don't want a smart fridge. I don't want a smart dishwasher. I'm not even sure I want a smart TV, but be that as it may. They could buy like Gemini for that.
Maybe they might just.
It just seems, because they had Bixby way back in the day on your.
They still
your,
have Bixby.
Do they still have Bixby? I've been off the Galaxy range in a while. Man, that Bixby was many things. It was definitely artificial, but definitely not intelligent. I mean, look, there's a big boom into it. And I suppose it's build or buy, and they building.
Although
maybe the 60 billion is to pay Google.
Yeah.
Alphabet for Gemini.
And that's the thing. So build or buy, I think if you get into a space where you're buying and you're buying something that someone else has, you must understand that you're going to have a generic product, much like buying anything else that is already in existence, right?
Yeah.
If you build and you have proprietary tech, great. Gives you some advantages. Only
assuming
Samsung uses. Assuming
it.
You can build. And that's the caveat, is assuming you can get it right. Assuming you can get the chips in. Assuming you can make up the lost ground or learn from the mistakes that everyone else has made. Maybe this is a good, worthwhile investment, but it is 5 trillion rands, which this is why I converted it to rands, was the South African economy in size for comparative purposes.
Our GDP.
Yes, is at 7.5 trillion rands. So just a little more than what these guys are spending on just AI. Right. And that's interesting because it comes to the third point that we'll get into as after we wrap up this one is, according to Investec CEO, Fana Titi, as of this morning, that is a figure that is understated. We should be worth a bit more if it weren't for some other things. But we'll come back to that.
But yeah, I also, this idea of so long story, I was looking and there's a lamp and it's got AI and it's like the last thing in the world. I mean, we're just trying to put AI into everything. And I think we're missing the story to a degree that we talk about the hyperscalers and we're not talking about the revolution that's happening in healthcare, that's happening in TV production and all of that sort of stuff. Yes. But we don't need AI in everything. You know, I don't need it in my TV or my, I can't think of anything. So we could argue that Samsung wants to put it into their phones.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But nothing else that they build needs AI.
Well, to be fair, if you're thinking about a smart home, right, and we're not far away from a smart home. We've already got Wi-Fi. We've already got connected devices. A smart home using AI, I could be at work or coming home from work late in traffic. I could defrost some food that I've left in a particular compartment. I can start up the kettle. I can do a lot of things while I'm stuck in traffic that speed up my journey once I get home.
But you can do that from an app. You don't need AI, because the problem with AI is it boils your chicken in the kettle.
Fair. You don't want the AI cooking for you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I suppose if we are intending on living on Mars as Elon Musk wants us to, it would be beneficial.
But I should get out of my comfort zone.
That's what I'm trying to make sense of.
I'll go home and boil chicken.
Using AI. Let's wrap it up with the fact that the Investec CEO believes the South African economy would possibly be worth 12 trillion instead of the 7.5 that it currently is if we had the other factors in our economy sorted out, like having a growth in the economy. So our economy is underperforming by 4 trillion, which again is almost the equivalent of this investment in AI. We could have twice the size of the economy.
If we had grown at 3% instead of 1% for the last 15 years, we would be 50% bigger. I mean, he's not wrong. He's absolutely not wrong. If we didn't have Eskom falling over in 2007 continually, 2008, my bad, until March of last year, I mean, he's not wrong in that regard. Absolutely. Our economy would easily be 50% bigger. And to be clear, it also means that all South Africans would be 50% richer, assuming we did the same population growth over the period.
Assuming everything else remained this. The economic term for it, ceteris paribus. I remember that from my Ecos 1 class. All things remaining equal.
Okay.
Yes.
Ceteris paribus. So ceteris paribusist. I agree. And I mean, it is the tragedy of the lost decade and a half of meager 1% growth and sub-investment, you know, junk status and all of that, is that we are paying for it. Think of all the extra tax collections that we would have got. I remember when Trevor Manuel was giving us tax cuts every year. You know, think where our debt would be. I mean, just
think about the unemployment rate. Think about everything.
Everything. Think where our rand would be, etc., etc. Revolt would not be opening a bank here.
Considering how we weathered the pandemic and how we've weathered all these other challenges, imagine if we had to weather them with an actual economy.
Mm-hmm.
And I say an actual economy because ours has been stagnant for so long, we don't know what an economy feels like anymore. We know what it is to exist. We know what it is to survive and make it through. But South Africa over the last 15 years has not thrived the way we could and the way we have the potential to.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. We have fundamentally underperformed. We're now starting, as we were talking about earlier, to get back on our feet. But we can't get that back. Those 15 years and 50% of our economy is gone. I mean, you know, one day we'll get to 12.5 trillion, but we
could have been there already.
Yeah, and then we would actually be moving to 18 and 20 trillion instead of we still need to get to 12. Yeah, no, it's what we lost in that decade. And to be clear, I was chatting with someone, and I forget who, not important. Well, they probably think so. You know, everyone's like, someone proposes a great disappointment. And the truth is that when he came, you don't just flick a switch and turn an economy. Now, to be clear, there's lots about Cyril Ramaphosa, particularly I want to meet his couch. But it takes time. And we're now, as we were saying earlier, on those first early baby steps. I mean, we're only just starting to recover that lost ground.
Which these baby steps could have been taken 2009, 2010, and we'd have 15 years more to show for it.
Correct.
Folks, we can't make sense of that. That's the sad truth, is we can't make sense of the fact that our economy is where it is. We wonder how we get out of it, and we've asked that question many a time on the show before, but we have run out of time for this particular episode. Before we go, we would dare not leave you without an unfiltered opinion, because as we mentioned a little earlier, ceteris paribus, that has to be part of the show, right? This week's unfiltered opinion is courtesy of Sai, and it is...
Man, I love the G20. I want them to come every weekend. No, you have to understand, my roads have been painted, which is moot. There's a pothole that has existed in Rosebank for like, I don't know, since before the pandemic. It got fixed. There's a pothole there by Moneyweb that there was one and they fixed that one and then a new one came and it got fixed. Man, we need more G20s. We want the G7s, the 19s, the 23s. We want all of them. All the time, because stuff is happening. It turns out we can. We choose not to. Or maybe, I don't know. I want more G20s.
We can get it done. That's the Unfiltered Opinion of the Week. Remember, folks, investing isn't hard. Just try it.
The views expressed by the host or hosts in this show do not necessarily represent those of our clients, sponsors, partners, or guests, and should not be considered investment advice in any way. Similarly, the views and opinions of our guests and clients do not necessarily reflect those of our hosts or our platform. Nothing shared on this platform or any other platform affiliated with us should be read and construed as constituting investment advice of any kind on the part of Insider Exchange, any of its hosts, guests, partners, or sponsors. Trading and investing carry varying levels of risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Please ensure that you fully understand the risks and take appropriate care to manage your risk. We strongly advise that you obtain independent financial, legal, and tax advice from regulated professionals and institutions before proceeding with investment decisions.